Welcome back to the Mini PC Show 2018, where we talk about Google Home Assistant, Amazon Echo Home Automation, how to turn your Raspberry Pi into an access point, the Orange Pi Plus 1 ready to ship, and controlling your Wi-Fi LED lights. Stay tuned for the Mini PC Show. Welcome back to the Mini PC Show, where we have a lot of talk about some tiny machines. My name is Brian.
I'm Rich.
I'm a door-to-door geek.
Hey, guys. Did you guys enjoy your New Year and your Christmas celebrations?
Well, I at the Hughes Compound Southern Command, because we are financially restricted by this thing called debt. we did everything on the DL, and so... It was a little meager, a little sparse, but, you know, so we exchanged gifts. Basically, we got stuff for our daughter, and that was pretty much it. I've got stuff on my wish and want and desire list, but that'll wait until income comes flooding in with 2018. The other thing we did on the cheap, which was kind of fun, there's, you know, if you go to Times Square for the ball drop, which I've never done when I was living in New York, and really never wanted to. Mm-hmm. My wife said she did it twice. But it used to be the property where the Burt Reynolds Museum was. And just on the intercoastal here, just pretty much if you drew a straight line from my property out to the ocean is where it would be. It's about 10 miles away. And they have an amphitheater. They had a live band. They had a 16-foot TV up on top of one of the buildings. And there's two parking garages there. And they had fireworks, which were, if you know Grouchy fireworks from Long Island, these were like somebody in a backyard had a bunch of, why can't I, what is it that shoots the flaming balls out? What's it called?
The Roman candle?
Roman candles. Yeah, it was like kind of large industrial Roman candle type fireworks that they had going on. Not a whole lot of mortar type stuff. So the neat thing was, one, it was completely free.
Nice.
It was very family friendly. It wasn't a whole bunch of, you know, 20 something drunk partiers. There are a lot of people with kids. There are, you know, every generation around there, and there's bars and nightclubs and whatever. I should, maybe not nightclubs. Tiger Woods has a restaurant there called In the Woods. There's a couple of places there. And Palm Beach's finest of all the different towns were there, and the sheriff's department, super nice police officers. We talked to a few of them, and you know, it was just a nice tame evening. Mm-hmm. and cost effective.
Nice. Was that the photo that you shared with us?
Yeah. They had a tree there, so yes, on Google Plus, I did post a photo, and that's right.
Yeah, that did. Okay, you guys were having a good time.
Yeah, it was a. Maybe the picture showed it was better of a time than it was, but it was kind of like, yeah, okay, we're out. We're not sitting home like we've always done. Other than going to a friend's house over the 10 years my wife and I have been married, we've pretty much stayed home. So my wife was getting cabin fever and wanted to go out.
Ah, I gotcha. I wasn't so lucky. I had to work on New Year's Eve.
Man. I've done that a couple of times, and I've always regretted it.
I've never done it, but it wasn't that bad because... We're very low-key when it comes to New Year's Eve. I think once I hit, like, 29 or 8 or something, it kind of went downhill from there. So either we hang with some, you know, friends and family and play cards or game board all night, or hang in the bed or sit on the couch, one of the two.
So yeah, back in the day when I was doing photography, like, for weddings, I did a couple of New Year's weddings, and I'm like, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to go out and drink and get paid for it. What the heck? Well, not like I drank, but right. You know, had a beer or two. But anyhow, so Dor, we've been yakking it up. What about you?
Yeah.
I had to go to work, not Christmas or Christmas Eve. It was like 2 days before Christmas Eve. A security contractor found a vulnerability that I accepted responsibility for, is the way I'll put it. But if I ever meet that guy, I'm going to punch him right in his crotch for doing such a scan on a holiday weekend, because that's not cool.
Wow.
Since my wife loves America and American, we went into a lot of debt. She went shopping Thanksgiving Day. The first words out of her mouth was, "I spent too much." Then she went out on Black Friday. Then she went out on Saturday, and about every 3 or 4 days up until Christmas. I got 2 ties, I guess, easier to hang myself with, I guess. I'm not sure.
Is the insurance paid up?
It's always paid up. And I have no problem saying it loud. I have a lot of life insurance on me. And it's never, it's the kind that doesn't expire, whatever the hell that is. It's not term life. And the wife.
You got some whole life.
And the wife openly admits to me that she can't take care of the kids by herself. So I'm worth more alive right now. New Year's Eve is actually our wedding anniversary. We went to Fogo de Chao for dinner. We usually go to Ruth Chris or something like that once a year. It's just once a year splurge kind of thing. Because of my carb light eating here since March, we went to Fogo de Chao, which is a Brazilian steakhouse, which basically means nonstop, all you can eat meat, lamb, chicken, beef, pork, everything meat-wise you can absolutely imagine. They have a salad bar, but that's for suckers or first-timers. and our kids are 12 and 9. This was the first year she felt they were, you know, old enough. We took them out to the dinner with us. A lot of people were like, how stupid are you to bring 2 kids to a expensive Brazilian steakhouse? They were both half price, so it wasn't close to as bad as it could be. And they loved it. My youngest, I couldn't believe it, said he loved the lamb, which blew me away. So that was a different thing. Except for that, I did absolutely as little as possible. Came home, drank a beer, stayed up, did work, went to bed.
Yeah, and I'm a little depressed at myself. I don't remember the last time I had alcohol. Although I know I did talk to you when I did, Dor.
Okay.
You're the one I drunk died.
Well, I'll just say you're not the first. I'm going to guess you're not the last, and that's okay.
There's a couple of things I'm not saying.
That's fine, too. I will also do like a quick advert kind of thing. February 8th, 9th, 10th, right around there, I believe 9th and 10th, I'm going to be in Orlando, Florida for PodFest. It's a podcaster conference down there in like the heart of Orlando. If you're down or around that area and you want to get a meal, talk, BS, hang out for a little bit, just give me a email or however way you want to contact me. I'm going to be there for more than a couple of days. It's an expensive conference, so I don't expect people who show up to just hang out and talk to actually pay their way into that conference. It is not cheap.
So it's not like if I drove the 2.5 hours up there because I'm flying rich, they just let me in?
I severely doubt that. For instance, they have people who at least consider themselves celebrities as far as podcasters who are going to be there, like Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting, self-acclaimed School of Podcasting. I'll say he's one of the guys who's going to be there. There's Mark Twain, I believe, said there's 3 types of lies. Lies, damn lies, and stats. Who says he has, you know, millions of downloads, this, that. So he's considered a celebrity. He's going to be there. I'm going to probably make at least a couple people there a little bit upset because I have to buy a shirt. The shirt's going to say something like, podcasters need to spend 30% of their income on other podcasters. If we as podcasters don't put money back into podcasting, how can we expect other people to do it as well? So,
and you know, Dor, you kind of set me off on that. One, if you're in town, I'm in town, I'll definitely head up and, you know, we'll have lunch, dinner, something. And likewise, if any of the fans, patrons, whatever of the show want to hang out, you know, drop us a line, call Dor. Door's number is 555-1212.
Sure. 443-640-8960 is my phone number.
And I don't think I've ever gotten your phone number.
Well, there you go. There it is. I don't answer the phone, so it doesn't matter. and I will say, Brian, I am trying to find something up in the Cambridge, Massachusetts, Boston area to at least give me an excuse to head up to the Northeast if there's a closer city I can shoot for it. I can try my best because I do. One of my goals is in like a 2 or 3 year time frame, visit as close to each podcaster on the network as close as I possibly can to at least sit down, have a steak or whatever the local, you know.
Yeah, I just wish my place was closer to Orlando because everybody comes to Florida, goes to Orlando, like, oh, hey, I was just in town. I'm like, damn. You know, because then if I was, you know, half hour, 45 minutes out of Orlando, you could be like, yeah, I'll cook you up a great steak. Come on over. You know, we'll drink some liquor by the pool and hang out.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I'm not too... Oh,
I'm sorry. I didn't finish one thought, and Dor kind of turned me on to this, is... Like Dor said, redistributing the wealth among the podcasters, and likewise, we pay a lot of money for entertainment, whether it's cable TV or whatever it is, and I'm a little angry because all I want is an internet connection. I don't want the TV, but I got to get the bundle because then it's cheaper. They actually slam you harder if you just get, you know, if you're a cord cutter. And as much as I don't have money, I'm like, okay, you know what? All of the entertainment I watch or partake upon, whether it's daily, weekly, whatever, it's got to be worth $20 a month. Easy. So I make sure that I patronize, you know, $20 a month on Patreon. And I probably should do more because there are people that provide content that I super enjoy and watch. So that's what I do. And along with that, I want to thank all of the patrons out there. I mean, there's people that support individual shows on Podnuts. There's people that support Podnuts as a whole. There's people that support me and Podnuts, which I greatly appreciate. So that's super nice of you guys.
Hey, you guys make a really good point. And it's always good. I mean, if you consume the stuff, it's always good to give back.
Yeah, and just like open source software, I'm sorry, Dor. If I'm going to use something, I like to send the guy a note like, hey, I found that useful. Thank you so much. Blah, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and nobody, no self-respecting person is asking for $50, $100 a month.
Right.
Then the bottom line is if you can't afford to give anything, don't think we're talking to you. If you're having a hard time making bills, if you're having a hard time putting your kid through college, if you're having a hard time getting your wife, you know, dinner, if you're having a hard time getting gas to get back and forth to work, if you're having a hard time finding a job, we're not speaking to you about this. If you want to support Podnuts, there's unbelievable numbers of ways. Rich said, just commenting back is unbelievably rewarding, is what I'll say. So there's a lot of different ways to show support, and that's the bottom line. The key word is support. Support those who support you. You know, bottom line is we're not celebrities. We don't want to be celebrities. We're not Hollywood elite. We don't have 30 people working on this one show and have to make, you know, $2,000 an episode or else we go under. Those people, in my humble opinion, get enough support already. No reason to Patreon them or no reason to support them by going to their URL to get them an extra one penny or 10 pennies or whatever. But yeah, but Brian, if there is any event up by you in any shape or form that you know of, let me know and I'll try to find a way.
Absolutely. No, I know Cambridge is pretty hopping sometimes with events and so forth.
Oh yeah, very. One of the things that I believe is in the Cambridge area is PAX East, which is probably a bit much to digest because it's video games, Penny Arcade Expo, I believe. But it's all kinds of video games, and it's the kind of thing where we probably might not be able to hear each other talk until we leave the venue. And that's okay, because there's plenty of good places around that city. First obvious question I'll ask you guys is, it's been a little while, is the way I'll put it. Is there anything you guys saw that really piqued your interest, or did you get any new hardware or try anything on a mini computer that you own in the last couple weeks? Because I have been, I can only speak for myself, obsessively, ridiculously booked. Either the kids were sick, the wife is sick, I'm sick, tired, exhausted, getting up at 3 a.m., staying up till 2 in the morning, putting together a scooter that I really do worry about my child's health on that thing because I put it together. Nothing good can come of that.
You mean you didn't spend the extra $50 to have somebody put that together for you?
I didn't even know he was getting the damn thing.
Oh, really?
I just know she came home and said, you're putting this together Christmas night. Oh, Okay.
Well, I say that was is a loaded question because it's been nothing but, can you do this for me, Dad? Can you help me do this, Dad? Dad, how come my screen isn't working? Dad, can you help me load this? Can you put this together for me? So we've been pretty busy with putting things together and loading software and figuring out how to do XYZ. So you've been pretty busy over here.
Well, I guess I'm the one with the boatload. So I've had nothing but time on my hands since mid-October, and I got a bunch of things to do. So last podcast, I'm not sure how deep I got into the home automation assistant stuff. I know we did talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Since then, and unfortunately a power outage today has kind of crippled my network and a bunch of things, but we're going to be recovering.
You talked about the 433 megahertz stuff you were doing a little bit. Okay, I want to say it was Google Now or Alexa integration. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about wanting to do something, I believe it was your dining room with the overhead sunroof. Okay. Type lights.
Yeah, so I'll do the shameless plug of flyingrich.com. You can see all of my social media there and the YouTube channel and the updates. So what I did do is they call it like a false skylight. There's like crown molding and whatever around it, and there's fluorescent bulbs there. And there's a bunch of fluorescent lights. So it gets, even though it's indirect lighting, it's still a little harsh. It's not mood lighting, you know? You can't dim it. You can't change the color of it. But what I did do is I threw some LED strips up there. And so the LEDs aren't so bright, but it's bright enough you can see what's going on. Because there is zero light pollution out here. We might as well be next to a black hole where we are. It's unbelievable. And I'm shame on me for not getting a telescope, because I really need to get one. I can just watch it in my backyard. So what I did do is with the 433 megahertz outlets is plug in the LED power, the power for the LED up there. And what that allows me to do is turn it on and off with Home Assistant. And since we've talked, I have IFT and Google Home working together and IFT and Home Assistant working together. So now I can say, hey, G, dining room light on. Hey, G, laser printer on. So the only printer that's working, because it's not an inkjet that cost $1 million a sheet to print on, is my laser jet. So when my wife or daughter want to use it, and you know, I tell them, oh, go to haspian.hcsc:8123, just bookmark that, it'll be okay. That's, you know, I might as well have told them, you know, I need a couple of pounds of plutonium. So, but the ability to say, hey, G, laser jet on, or hey, G, Christmas lights on, they get it. You know, that works for them. So that's really cool. Except, I think my router is FUBAR since the power outage, and it's not doing the virtual, what do you call it, a virtual server. So it's not redirecting the port to the particular device, the Raspberry Pi, that's running the Google Assistant. So while I'll say, hey, G, laser printer on, it'll say turning laser printer on, but it doesn't connect. It doesn't make it all the way into my network and do the turn on. It actually turns these things on quick. It's not like you got to count to five. It happens almost immediate. So that's really nice. The light, because of the power supply, the voltage coming up is the only thing that takes a few seconds. So that's the only thing that isn't instant on.
Hey, so, Rich, one second.
Yeah.
So can you explain the data path here? So when you speak into the Google Assistant, does it go out to the internet and then come back, or does it stay within your network?
All right. Best I understand, everything with Google Assistant other than the wake word, it's going out to Google and processing the audio.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always phoning home. And so that's another problem when you're doing home automation is, are you on the grid and connected to the net? Because all sorts of stuff has to be connected to work. If you want something that's off the grid and doesn't phone home, you got to go, you know, a completely different route. Mm-hmm. So the Google Home, you have to connect to IFT. You know, you set up your IFT account and you connect the two. And so now you can go to IFT.com. That's IFTTT. So that's if this, then that. And you can say, actually, let me pull it up right now so I know what I'm talking about. And when you go on, if you, the things that you create are called applets. Mm-hmm. So if I click, let me just create a new applet. Let me go to my applets. So when I say new applet, there's a plus for the if this, and then you type in a search like Goo for Google, and it says Google Assistant, and then you can select say a simple phrase. So if you click on that, it just asks you, hey, what do you want to say? Is there another way to say it? And it, so it gives you three ways to say it. What do you want the response to be? And then you click create trigger. So that creates the trigger for the event you want to do. And then once you do that, you go into the that and you create a webhook. So the webhook, let's say for my LaserJet printer, and I'm just going to open the applet here. So what you're doing is you can make an HTTP request, whether it's a post. Let's see, your options are get post, put, head, delete, patch, options. And then you can specify the content. So application JSON, text plane, application x-www, form URL encoded. There's a body that's optional. So when if you're doing Home Automation Assistant, it'll show you, you can go through and see what the objects are. So for the URL, my URL is either my name, you know, from like DuckDNS or whatever it may be, whatever you're using to identify your network. And I have to open the port. And one of the dumb things, because I always use a particular IP address, my Odroid XU4's IP address that does almost everything on my network. That's the network I plumbed things to stupidly when I did the virtual server and didn't understand why it didn't work. And then I looked at it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's not the IP address for the Home Automation Assistant. So in the URL, it's either the name that you use from, you know, one of these DNS supporters like DuckDNS, the port. Now you can redirect ports, but I just did it one-to-one, so it's port 8123. /API/services. This happens to be a switch, one of those 433 megahertz switches. So it's /switch/turn_off or on, depending on what you're doing. *API_password equals, and then the password for your Home Automation Assistant. And so that's part of the magic. It's always going to be a post. It's always going to be application.json. And then you specify the entity. So curly brace and quotes entity _ID colon, and then quote switch dot, and it's switch.office_HPLJ5, close quote, close curly brace. And boom, you click save. Mm-hmm. And so again, with complexity is fragility, that stuff may not work right. And it seems like after I do this show, I'm going to have to like power down my router, do a cold boot on it. Because certain things I've noticed are a little fluky since the power outage and things came up. Also, what I've been doing for a week now is I've been using Pi-hole. So the DNS, so when I reboot my network, I have to have the Odroid that's running the Pi-hole come up first and then the router come up after that, because the DNS is coming from the Pi-hole now. And that's how it's handling blocking ads.
You don't want to block any ads. Come on.
Do you know what? Here's the thing. I don't expect anybody to work for nothing. That's wrong. You're a bad person if you believe that, because that's something called slavery. Likewise, if I'm reading an article on a news site, they have every right in the world to put ads. But when the ads are unbelievably intrusive, that's when I'm backing away from it, and I'm going to peel it back a layer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, I'm not proactive about blocking ads, except for my kids. These ads today have gotten so much more, intrusive and intelligent about planting little seeds in minds and impressions in minds and, to be honest, beliefs in minds, that I don't like my kids seeing a lot of the ads that are available. So that's one of the reasons why I pay for YouTube Red. So when they access YouTube, they don't see any of those ads. And any parent today that I speak to says their kids are hooked on YouTube. And so mine,
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
It's just instant, quick satisfaction, nonstop ads. Just keep, I mean, if I was a kid and I could watch every episode of Thundercats back to back to back to back, I would have probably never stopped watching them either. But after the half hour, something else was on TV. So because they can, they do. And because they do, right. I don't let them see ads on YouTube.
Gotcha. You know, this may be a little off topic for the show, but I was kind of surprised. So as we're coming home from New Year's Eve, we stopped at IHOP. We have never been to IHOP before in our lives.
Well, do you know the best reason to go to IHOP? To feel better about yourself. Because you look around and there's always people in the place that look worse than you.
Is that like going to Walmart?
That is exactly like going to Walmart.
You're putting on your good sweatpants and going to Walmart?
Something like that.
So something I use Waze a lot because as much as I like the police, I don't like meeting them on the highway. And so the corridor in Palm Beach here, I-95, is heavily patrolled. And but what I did notice is my Waze always showed me before New Year's Eve where the Dunkin' Donuts were. And I don't know if it knows I go to Dunkin' Donuts, but it would always pop up on the map where Dunkin' Donuts were. I noticed after New Year's Eve, and I was never at an IHOP before in, you know, like the last 10 years, now I'm seeing IHOPs popping up on my Waze map. And I didn't use Waze to get to IHOP, and I didn't use Waze to get home from IHOP. So I just found that, you know, you're talking about advertising. And I don't know if I think it's nice or if I think it's creepy.
Or a little bit of both.
Yeah.
A little bit of both.
It all depends on who you are, I guess. What you're satisfied with or comfortable with.
Now, I got to just make sure I don't go to an adult entertainment shop with my phone in my pocket, because then, you know, all hell's going to break loose.
Yeah, I will say I've been trying to keep an eye on a lot of these mini PCs, and the show is going to naturally drag into it the IoT stuff. The couple things that I will just say about IoT in general here in the last couple weeks is anybody who owns an Amazon Alexa, which I do believe is the number one selling, at least before Christmas, home appliance type home assistant thing you could get. There is, I don't know how substantiated, but rumors at least of Amazon discussing with companies about doing suggested advertisements. Hypothetical, Amazon, what should I use to clean my wood floor? And the answer would be, why, Pine Sol? It gives it that fresh pine scent, you know, kind of thing. To which I will say, you are not paying Amazon any money for the luxury of using their enormous cloud infrastructure stack every time you use that device. Okay? Nothing in the universe is free, period. It's only a natural tendency for the business, for the enterprise, for the company, for the board, for the good of the investors, for them to try to find a way to make money off you constantly using their device. So the path to ads, I think, is a very natural path. I don't like it, but I think it's a natural progression.
I do want to add to that, Dor. Amazon is collecting a plethora of data and information in a sense where they could better their services and obviously make the Alexa backend a little bit more smarter. I mean, I'm sure they're doing this with big data. They'd be kind of crazy not to take all this information that they're free information that they're getting from people's voice searches, the, you know, tones and how they're searching, the language that they're using, just to make Alexa that much more better. I think Apple actually could have done something similar to this to make their product, their AI, a little bit more smarter. So
I think what one of the products, and Dory, I'm sure you've heard about this, that whether you're listening to TV or radio or whatever, that there's ultrasonic tones broadcast along with that. And so they're seeing what you're watching on TV, or they're hearing, you know, they're getting those keys from those tones on the Alexa or Google Home or whatever it may be.
Or your phone.
So Right. Or your phone. So yeah, you are the product.
Absolutely.
And it's just like one of the things I've noticed, if you go to Google Maps, I find Google Maps unbelievably useful. It's like on our way to New Year's Eve, we're like, hey, we're going to get coffee and hot chocolate at a Dunkin' Donuts. It's like, which one's open? It's, you know, 9 o'clock. Some close early. And you can see, you know, how late they're open. You can see when it's busy. And they know what hour. They got a bar chart of their busy time, and they know that based on people with their phones in their pockets, you know, with the GPS on them or other means, walking into the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
Whether using Android Pay or Apple Pay or, you know, whatever. When you use, you know, a pay system like Android Pay or Apple Pay, the transaction was just not the money. It's the data that you were there at a particular time.
Yeah, and I hate saying this, but if Edward Snowden taught us anything, should have taught us anything, let me rephrase that, is metadata can be just as valuable as real data.
Absolutely.
I'll just say it again. To me, it's a natural thing for them to do. I'm not going to curse them. I'm not going to speak bad about them. I will say for a person to buy one of these and not to expect other things to be going on besides Alexa just being a great kitchen counter timer or allowing me to buy things or allowing me to put things to a list or my Google Now device, you know, letting me do other things. If you expect it to do nothing else, I don't know why you thought that is what I'll say clearly. Just like phones. If you expect your phone to only do as you wish, when you wish, then get off your butt, design boards, write the code, buy the screen and the case and put it together yourself, because other people write this operating system with immense numbers of alternate tasks that we don't even know. I mean, the big, for instance, is it just came out a week or two ago that Apple is, and I'm going to actually defend them on this. They're purposefully slowing down your iPhones based upon the number of charges. Now, I'm sure their engineers thought logically, the older the phone, the older the battery, the older the eMMC, the slower it's going to be. So let's preemptively slow everything down at a gradual pace so it appears like nothing is slowing down to try to give these users a smooth transition into your phone acting wonky and slow instead of seemingly one day you pick it up and now you have this hard hit of eMMC error. Error correction going on.
The way I understood it is maybe something's going to draw too much power at one shot, or maybe it's going to drain the battery super fast.
Right.
So they're cutting the CPU cycle so the battery lasts longer.
That's the way I took it too as well.
And every time you discharge one of these batteries, they lose a little bit of their essence and they will never get it back again and they will never hold that exact same charge. Any milliamp battery you buy is never that milliamp. And that's the, for instance, I give it. If you buy a 10,000 milliamp portable USB battery pack, you will never get 10,000 milliamps out of it. You'll get 8 something at best. And then after you charge, discharge hundreds of times and with these phones, thousands of times, you'll be lucky to get half.
Yeah, and that's absolutely correct. What they call it is cycles, and they've always said, oh, and this, you went from nickel cadmium to nickel metal hydride. Nickel metal hydride doesn't have a memory. Well, yes, it does. And now we're using, you know, lithium ion or lithium polymer. And the lithium polymer or lithium ion both reduce capacity over time. Your battery wears out. It's simple chemistry. I know lead acid batteries better. So if you take a nice lead sheet and you dissolve it and then you reconstitute it, it's not going to be that nice lead sheet, you know, after you take it down, you know, so many times. It's constantly wearing and it may make dendrites and connect to from one plate to another and you might have a dead cell eventually. That's almost all of the batteries. It's like I could walk across the room here and grab a little power vault. Even a Tesla runs on something that looks like a AA battery.
Everything. Here's the gimmick. Almost everything in the world we know of runs off 18650s. 18650 correct. Is the battery that's in all the Teslas. It's in every laptop battery. It's in an unbelievable number of devices, including like
Weed Whacker. Yeah,
Weed Whackers, your power tools, your portable power tools, even the exit signs above doors when the power goes out, they stay on.
They're just packaged different.
Because they have 18650s in them. It is the most universal battery there is. Just like if you open up, you can open up like the old, what was it, 6-volt battery, the big cube one.
Yeah,
right. There's nothing more.
Or a 9-volt.
Right. Or you can open up a 9-volt, and they're nothing but smaller batteries put in them.
Hey, there's 2 AA batteries inside here.
Yeah. So all batteries are actually other forms of batteries packaged into bigger packages kind of thing.
Unless it's like lithium polymer, then it's something
different. Like the iPhone battery. The Samsung batteries are typically form-fitted type batteries that are definitely different batteries, but a battery is a battery is a battery. There's no mystical, magical mojo going on. And the dirty secret is, for the last 200 years, battery technology really hasn't advanced remotely close to the technology of everything else.
And so the issue is, you have a pack, and the pack may contain 10 batteries, and one cell goes bad. Not all of the cells go bad. Not all of the cells go bad at the same time. A cell will go bad. And ideally, if it was like anything that you drop a AA battery and you just pop the bad one out, you put it, or if you have to test them and then put them all back in. But what people will do is they'll take their laptop or their Tesla battery or whatever it may be, pull out the bad cells, keep the good cells, and rebuild the pack. And they're doing that also with Toyota Priuses.
Yeah, and that's a dirty secret. If you want to get into making and you want to do electronics and you want to have stuff with batteries in them, go to a pawn shop. Well, first off, research to make sure you know what you're doing and you don't have one explode on you. But you go to a pawn shop, buy laptops that are nearly dead. And if you go there at the right time, they'll just give them to you because they're not of any use to them. You take the old batteries to those laptops. They might not hold a charge, in air quotes, but you open it up and there's actually going to be like 9 or 12 of these batteries. And when one of them die, the whole thing stops doing a charge. So you have 10 perfectly good batteries inside there that you can use and 2 that you got to throw away or something. I know 2 guys, that's how they do all of their making. That's how they do all of their projects. They basically go to thrift stores and get laptops that they're getting ready to just throw away because nobody's buying them. They rip open the battery and voila, they got batteries for days.
That's a very good tip, Dor. Thank you.
Yeah. The only other IoT things that I've seen is, I want to say Sonos and somebody else is going to be releasing a device that's going to be able to do simultaneous Amazon and Google stuff on it at the same time. And in typical journal fashion for all these websites out there reporting on it, they're like, this is the holy grail of a home assistant. In reality, it's the treasure trove that the companies want. Because all it means is more data for everybody. So if you do get a device that does support Amazon and Google, expect you to be giving up even more data more frequently to more sources.
Well, and I'm guessing if, you know, there was the Flying Rich Home hockey puck device, I would get to keep the data also.
Well,
like say I worked with Amazon or it worked with Alexa.
You would have some ownership thereof, yes, absolutely.
I think it would be better if we were to get a paycheck in the mail for all of our information that they're using.
And that's the beef that I've had. And I worked for a company. We did pre-employment background screening. So in New York, if I wanted to get my driving history to find out, you know, how many points I had or tickets or whatever, I'd have to pay $750. But if a third-party company that does pre-employment background screening, of course they do it in volume, they pay 50 cents.
Hmm.
So we credit reporting agencies, I think it's state by state, but they have to, I think in Florida, at least once a year, give you a free report.
Yeah, the same in Mass.
Whereas the New York State Motor Vehicle doesn't.
Well, that's different. That's a state institution, and the credit is not a state institution. the government is perfectly fine regulating a independent company saying you're going to give people this stuff for free. But when it comes to a government, no, we're not giving it away for free. Unless, of course, you're another government agency. If a government agency did that same background check in that same state, they ain't paying nothing.
Right.
So, you know, that's just the way information is handled. And I will say, I said this, I don't even know how long ago now, but it's, I think, more and more and more and more and more and more and more true as time goes on. 100 years ago, to be public would cost a fortune. To be private was free. More and more in the future, to be private is going to be expensive in more than just money. You're going to have to cast aside a lot of conveniences in order to be absolutely private. And to be public is easy. Just turn on your selfie cam and go to YouTube and say, stream now. And all your privacy is just thrown right away. As much information as you want to give is gone. And you're never going to get it back again. Because once you upload anything to any of these services, you are no longer the owner nor control it. And congressmen and celebrities alike have learned when something goes on the internet, it will never come off the internet again. It was
never.
Copies will be there forever. Until, of course, a massive EMP takes everything out. But, you know, I think you have time for that. Okay, was there anything in the notes you guys wanted to highlight?
You know, just if you're doing the home automation, IoT, line 591 and 592 is the LEDs, the full-color LEDs, and the controller, the Wi-Fi controller, and it integrates straight in with Google Home, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, and that Wi-Fi controller, you're getting off of... Thank you. I didn't want to say that.
I think it's...
Was
I tricked into that?
I don't know. But it's only $8. It is unbelievably dirt cheap. Now, the question I have to ask, does it take 3 months to get to you?
I got them yesterday. I didn't get the LED strips yet. And let me go to my Banggood site.
Wow. I like those lights. $6.
That's pretty cheap.
So order date was December 14th. So I got it yesterday, and I'm shocked I didn't get the LEDs today because they're shipped at the same time. So what is that, 2 weeks? Is it 20 days?
Yeah, almost 3 weeks.
Okay. So, you know, 3 weeks, which is, I think the shipping was free, so I'll take it.
Yeah, free's good. I'll take that. And yeah, whenever I order anything from outside of the country, period, and this is how the rest of the world feels, just for us people in the U.S., you got to understand, anything you order outside of your country, there's going to be a natural delay. It's called customs. It happens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when I order something from China and it gets here in under 3 weeks, I am amazed. Or somebody at customs just didn't do their job is what I'm thinking. I don't know. So 3 weeks to me is perfectly fine. 3 months is a little worrisome, I'll say.
Oh, and the only pro tip on the wireless, the Wi-Fi controlled LEDs is the Wi-Fi controller to make that work with your Google Home. I don't know if it works with Amazon. It might. You need to use their Pro app. And usually on the Google Play Store, when something is Pro, it's a fee paid type thing. But this is not. So actually, I'm using the phone right now that I'm using the controller, but it's home something. There's a barcode, a QR code on the device so you can scan it and you can load the app and it loads right in and works. And you just got to use the Pro one, create an account, and boom, it's set.
Gotcha.
Are we going to use these for it, Rich?
I'm using them right now. So they integrate directly with Google Home. They also integrate with Home Automation Assistant. So all I have to do is I connect to the controller with my phone, and then I tell it what Wi-Fi network to connect to and the Wi-Fi password. And then it just works. And I can use my phone as a remote for it. I can use the speaker on the phone to control the lights. So if I'm playing music and want the lights to be controlled by the music, I can do that. I have a set of RGB lights, meaning there's a red LED, a green LED, that kind of thing, where they're individual LEDs. The LEDs I'm ordering, they're combo, so each LED can be any color. Because when I turn the LEDs that I have now on white, basically I get a rainbow, because that's all LEDs on as opposed to one LED that has all of the primary colors and gives me white light when they're all on. So what I'm doing right now is I'm just flashing them red and green for Christmas.
Oh, okay. That's a pretty nice idea in there. Oh, these are non-waterproof.
Yeah. And there are waterproof ones. So if you want to do something outdoors, And the pro tip on that, if you're doing outdoor work with the outdoor LEDs, you can solder them up and you can use RTV, clear RTV to seal up the joint.
Mm.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Yeah. Good way to do Christmas lights for the front of the house.
Well, it's internal. I'm doing it inside.
No, I mean for the waterproof ones, if you're already waterproof route.
Right.
Gotcha. One link I wanted to bring up, 598 in the notes. In the past, I'll just put it like this. I know Linux. I know computers. I don't really know a lot about networks. I know, you know, how to get it up and running and how to break it. But quite often, for instance, on the Raspberry Pi back in the day, if you tried to statically set the IP address on the device itself, it just sometimes wouldn't work. Or the network just would stop working altogether on it. So you had to do alternate things to get it to work like that. I, on my router, would set a MAC address reservation to get the IP again. More than a couple times, I wanted to turn a Raspberry Pi into an access point, and following the tutorials was not easy. There's a bunch of things you have to get set up to get a true access point, because you got to have DHCP running, you got to have it be able to go into broadcast mode. A lot of different things had to fall into place, and I found this. We might have talked about it actually in the past, but I never remembered it. It's called RASAP-WebGUI. So it's Raspbian Access Point Web GUI. On GitHub, you can download it, install it. It doesn't look complicated to get up and running, but what it is, it gives you a web interface to your Raspberry Pi so you can set it up as an access point or even as a router. So you can have...
But wait, you're not telling the whole story. It's setting it up on your phone, right?
Well, it has a web dashboard on the Raspberry Pi, which you can access on your desktop, laptop, phone, or whatever. So as long as you can access it one way, either Ethernet or Wi-Fi, you can set the other thing up. Now, I would connect wired to it to set it up to have the Wi-Fi be an access point. Because like one of the things I wanted to do was to, whenever I went to a conference, have a Raspberry Pi and a battery pack in my backpack and broadcast PodNuts access point. And anytime someone would access, I wanted to do a captured portal to where it would launch a streaming feed of podcast shows. So anyone that would access that access point, whenever they would launch anything and try to access anything, it would automatically launch in a web browser, a web page playing the content. And I had off and on for weeks trying to get it up and running just right, and I could never get it completely running. I would get the access point running, and then DHCP wasn't working exactly right. Then DHCP would kind of work right, but then the captured portal wouldn't work right. This would at least simplify getting the access point and the DHCP up and running correctly. So I will like to play with this. I don't know if I will be able to, but I'm definitely going to try.
This reminds me of the GLINet, which is it's like a tiny little access point. Well, it's a small router too as well with an access point, in about smaller than the Raspberry Pi. And I think you can buy them on Amazon for like $20. I posted a little link, but I think we talked about these in the past quite a bit. As you were talking about it, it reminded me of that, and I tried doing that as well too on the Raspberry Pi. I failed, and I gave up after a while. But then when I found the GLINet, it was golden. It was mint. It fits right in the palm of your hand. Powers with a micro USB. It's got a WAN port and a LAN port on it with a USB port for storage.
Yeah, and on mine, the USB was also for power, to power up the device. Oh, this has micro USB.
Yeah.
There's a whole classification of devices. They're typically called either travel routers, pocket routers, micro routers. There might be one or two other names. They're all basically the same thing. The hardware is seemingly close in a lot of these. This is a very standard hardware model, I can tell you, by looking at the ports and where they're at. $19 for this is a damn good deal, is what I'll say. This is the kind of thing where if you wanted to always have your access point here sitting by you, and on it either have Tor or have OpenVPN go back to your home network. So anywhere you're at, you can hook that device up and then allow anybody or all of your devices to connect to that one point for a trusted portal. For $19, it is extremely hard to beat.
Yeah. And it works on WRT, so you can download a host of open source applications that, that'll play nicely with it too as well.
Yeah, and they have two versions here, a $17 version and a $20 version. $16 version has 64 megabytes of RAM. The $20 version has 128 megabytes of RAM. Just to prove one of my beliefs is it hardware, man, this, I'm going to say this very carefully. In a lot of respect, hardware doesn't matter. It's software. There's a reason why you can have, and the example I'm going to use is the Nintendo Switch. There's a reason why you could have low-end hardware play what appears to be high-end things, and that's software optimization. With good software optimization, you can make hardware do things that other people say is not possible, not plausible. Right now in computers, we take hardware for granted, and we extremely underutilize actual hardware potential by relying on unoptimized code is the best way I can put it.
I always told my mom, you're going to buy a new computer, Mom, you're buying way too much computer for what you're using it for. Half that processor speed that you're checking your email and going online with is going to waste.
Well, the good news is when her computer does slow down, it might take her twice as long to notice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to find a bright side.
Yeah, the mini travel router, I just want to make note that these aren't for like standard home use. I mean, you can use them at home, but they're not really meant for that. I threw one in the minivan with a portable SSD drive and some tablets for the kids so they can stream movies using XBMC as we were traveling down the road. So that worked out pretty good.
Very cool. Yeah. My logic is that these are solid devices. These are meant to be used aggressively, but not for 20 days straight, like a home router. You know what I mean?
Right.
A quick curveball to you guys. Man, Intel and AMD extreme, in some ways, kernel vulnerabilities in drivers has came out like the last 24, 48 hours kind of thing. Do you have any initial reactions to it or thoughts about it?
I read on it and tried to understand it. The one takeaway is there's a patch for Linux, but every other OS, you're screwed until they come out.
Microsoft says they patched this last year.
Oh.
That's what they say.
All right, so you're telling me Mac is the only one that's vulnerable?
First off, I don't believe Microsoft. Let's just go there. Two, nobody is being extremely clear about this. They're all using extremely mush-mouth words.
I read part of what was on GitHub about it, and I just found it difficult to follow along.
Well, the only thing I got out of it clear was when the patch comes out, it's an operating system patch. It's not a firmware patch. It's an operating system patch, so it's a driver issue. The more an application or service uses kernel calls, you could see as much as a 50% slowdown in applications, or as little as a 2% slowdown in applications. So it sounds like they were, I'll just say, cutting corners to try to make their hardware faster than it actually was. Hmm. And I'll say my first initial reaction was, great, after Minix and after all these backdoors we're hearing about Intel and x86 architecture, this coming out about Intel and x86 architecture, because AMD is suffering from the exact same thing, I say, great. This gives more power, more dominance, more authority, more persuasion to the ARM platform. With every time something bad, and I hate saying like this, happens to x86, x64, Intel, AMD stuff, the better ARM stuff looks in the long run. I don't want to say it has a chance to become a truly trusted platform, because you as a company delivering a piece of hardware as a solution have the opportunity to actually own the code that's running that processor and not rely on if you're in any other country, an American-based company giving you the code for that Intel chip. That's all I could take from it was, it, to me, it gives a little bit more punch to ARM as a solution.
I feel a little jaded because I did not see this article. So I'm actually trying to catch up myself on it. I'm looking at an article right now that says that this might be affecting ARM as well. And Dory, you just said that this is specifically related to the x86 platform.
Well, as of right now, the only things that have been confirmed to be suffering from this is at least some, if not most, Intel chips, and at least some AMD chips is all I heard.
Okay.
I would be shocked if kernel drivers for Intel i5, i3, i7, M, Atom, and AMD, whatever, would be the same code running on ARM. I could be completely wrong with that. But I know one guy who his job was making kernel level drivers modules for Linux, and he made it very clear there were very few people of his experience who could do this. And I got the impression like none of those people were Intel type people. So I don't know. They definitely said to do this stuff on ARM was much more easier, much simpler to do. I'll just say I don't mind a shakeup in computing in general. Hopefully wake some people up, hopefully open some eyes, hopefully make people realize that, you know, this isn't the 1980s with Blossom on TV. This is 2018 where stuff's getting real.
Yeah. I'm not 100% shocked hearing something like this. It's just, what next? Like you said, it's going to get very real. So how much real is it going to get, you know?
Yeah, the only other, like, kind of real news I heard in the last couple of days was supposedly NSA is losing a lot of employees, a lot of their higher-end employees, because those employees, A, like to do drugs, and it's not in NSA's policy to allow such a thing, and they just can't pay enough to keep them on board. So with those experts leaving NSA, not that that was a great place for them to be as far as I'm concerned, and now I'm even more worried. Are these people going to Amazon? Are these people going to Google? Are these people going to Apple? And if so, are they going to be doing the exact same kinds of things just now for companies?
Yeah. Are they starting their own companies, promoting themselves, becoming a hired gun? Who knows, right?
Yeah, and the latest rumor mill about business I heard was either Amazon looking at buying Target or Apple looking at buying Disney.
Wow. Disney just bought Fox. Yeah.
And before that, Star Wars. And before that, Marvel.
I think Fox, right, wow. But didn't they not buy Fox News? Wasn't that separate, or was
Fox News has always been separate? Yeah, that was a separate entity. It's like, dare I say, Verizon and Verizon Wireless. They're actually two different companies.
Okay.
I'll just say this. I'm starting to feel a lot like 1970s and Ma Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I think in this country, as of late, we're having too many big companies buying big companies. And the number of choices for all of our big economic purchases seems to be cutting down more and more and more and more. And I don't know if that's
good. Right. There's going to be a single source provider.
I just don't think it's a good thing. I love competition. And with companies buying other big companies, it just cuts down competition.
We're all going to end up like WALL-E. Where there's going to be one major corporation to rule
them
all.
By and large?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't China going to be buying America soon?
Well, I don't know.
Well, they own most of our debt.
Well, the last thing I heard was, yes, they own most of our debt, but China itself is in a mad shell game of their own debt. They're like barely above water with their own debt, but just enough above water that they can say they're above us. And, you know, it's weird. I just hope people win and not governments. The only other bit of really hardware news that I saw was that Orange Pi 1 Plus board being announced. There was another one, I want to say, called a grapefruit or a grape board, but I know Orange Pi. I know what to expect with Orange Pi. But this board did confuse me just a smidge. Orange Pi 1 Plus, the single board computer with all-winter H6 processor 4K support. We've mentioned other boards with H6 processors on it, so that's not amazing or outstanding from what I can tell. Physically, size-wise, it is smaller than the Raspberry Pi. It's nothing like a Nano Pi or anything like that. I think the only gimmick is it's $20, so they're excited about it. I can't even find a processor speed on this when I look at it. Nothing tells me anything about processor speed. It says it can do 4K. It says it has 1 gig of RAM, which I'm shocked it's that low, I'll just say. It has a micro SD slot that only supports 32 gig. I'm kind of shocked by that. And it only has USB 2.0 ports, even though it says the processor can support USB 3.0. I mean, $20 is a great price for this thing. Don't get me wrong. Great price for this thing. But again, hardware is cool. As it turns out, long-term success of these things, hardware is the least of my concerns or worries. It's more of the OS, and Orange Pies, in my opinion, always run warm, is what I'll say. Yeah. Because I don't want to say hot, but, you know, kind of warm. But for $20, I honestly won't lie. I'm tempted to buy one of these things when they become available, because I don't believe they're available to buy yet. For $20, it might be worth the gamble. Even if it's just a one-off server on the side. Oh, it looks like you can buy it now. And it says estimated delivery time 12 to 20 days. Anyone care to take a wager on that? I'm just saying.
A wager on when it'll
Yeah, because I'll say at minimum 3 weeks.
Yeah, 12 to 20 days.
Yeah, I'm just shocked it has a gig of RAM.
So here's the thing that I have a gripe with. When you buy AliExpress, okay, the unit price is $19.99. So if I click buy now, it's
never $19.99.
Yeah, it's $23.47 with the shipping. So after I pay, let's just call it $24 and wait 3 weeks, is it really a bargain? Sounds good.
But 1 gig of RAM scares me, especially when they tout Android on this thing.
Yeah.
It says
Android 7.
Right. Yeah. And it says Ubuntu and Debian. I will say I've had plenty of boards that tout Ubuntu and Debian support, and then you launch Ubuntu or Debian, and when you try to do something in a graphical GUI, it doesn't display correctly. So
You look at this is the Orange Pi Plus 2 with the H3 quad core processor.
That's the previous one. This is the Orange Pi 1 Plus with the H6 processor. And I believe it literally just came out maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there it is.
With a lot of these boards now, I'm purposely wanting to wait a couple weeks at least. And I hate to say this out loud, but honestly, I'll wait till I see a YouTube video of somebody showing me things running on it. And the example I'll use is, I'll try to find the link, make sure it's in the note. But this video, let me tell you something. The guy says the word peep. Peep this out. I peeped this out. Just way too much. Just way too much. Just way, way too much. But he was showing off the Odroid XU4 running a emulator type OS on it. And it was smoking. It was beautiful, running fantastic Nintendo 64 games. Like really good Sega Dreamcast games, really good. And yes, this is the price of at least three of those boards. But it's, I don't want to use the word mature, but this Odroid XU4 has been out for a year-ish, if not more. And the every OS I've loaded on this Odroid XU4 has been remarkably solid. And I don't want to say smooth, but runs pretty damn good.
And the Diet Pi versions are running better and better. I'm having less temperature issues. Yeah, I mean, Odroid XU4 is like the Maserati, the Ferrari, whatever, of the single board computers, I think. I mean, as far as ARM goes.
Yeah, and I said it once, and I'm not trying to insult anybody, but every day the Raspberry Pi falls further and further behind in performance and optimization. If you're looking for performance and optimization, higher end activities with response time, with low latency, your answer is not a Raspberry Pi. If you want to use something for learning, for education, if you want to follow online tutorials to set up servers or some kind of infrastructure or Kubernetes or, yeah, Raspberry Pi. But if you want to run a higher end emulation station, can't do a Pi, man. I've tried to run Nintendo 64 stuff on Raspberry Pi 3, and you got to spend a lot of time tweaking each individual ROM to get the settings just right.
Well, the good thing about the Raspberry Pi, it's kind of like the Chevy 350.
I agree.
Is it just runs. There's loads of stuff for it. You don't have to, you know, do anything kind of crazy to search out and find stuff to work with it. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely, it's the anchor. You know, is it the fastest, the best, is the this is? No. But I want to give them big cred and say, hey, you know, they're the ones that have allowed us to do all of these things. They're the ones that brought the spotlight onto ARM and made it, you know, a low cost and that really brought it to us. But I do want to mention a couple of things about this. So this has gig Ethernet. Mm-hmm. If it's real gig Ethernet, that's a real big deal. Mm-hmm. It does have a couple of other features that may be of interest to you. So it's got an HDMI. It's HDMI 2.0, correct?
Yep, 2.0 A port, which means the big port. I don't like the B and the C.
Okay. Has an IR receiver and a mic input.
And
so
it has a power switch.
You could use it as an Alexa, which I didn't mention. Did I mention last show? No, I didn't, because it was after last show. I set up an Orange Pi Zero as an Alexa.
Oh, no, you didn't mention that.
Going to do a video of it, and it was going to be titled The Retarded Deaf Alexa.
Wow, that says a lot.
I may not have to do the video now. So the winner on this, you know, HDMI port is always a big plus if you're coming from hardware that doesn't have HDMI ports. Gig Ethernet, if it's real gig Ethernet. I'd love to see 2 gigs USB 3.0 and SATA, you know, in real SATA, but it doesn't have it. But it does have the mic input in the IR receiver. So if you want to have it as a Kodi box or something like that for your TV, that could work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I put a link in our chat, Rich. You mentioned before the show, I think I found what you were talking about. It looks like NanoPi is coming out with a NanoPi Fire 2A and 2.3 boards, which looks form-wise closer to a Pine 64 type board, which is literally like the size of 2 Raspberry Pis put together, board size. And this has on it the thing that I think makes the Odroid X-U4 better than a lot of other devices is the fact that it has Samsung Exynos processor on it, higher end processor compared to 99% of the ARM boards out there. Samsung Exynos processors are better, period. This has also, this NanoPi Fire 2A and the Fire 3 have Samsung quad-core and octa-core processors on them. It has gigabit Ethernet, micro HDMI. I'm not a huge fan of micro HDMI, but it's better than nothing or DVI. It does have USB 2 on it, does have reset key, power key, which I'm big guy for that. Again, 1 gigabyte of RAM, which I'm surprised it's actually that low. That's the 3. The Fire 2A only has 512 megs of RAM. But just because this has Samsung processors on it, this could be a device that outperforms a lot of other devices. If this is the device you were talking about.
No, it was square, okay. Like a NanoPi Neo.
Yeah, this one is a Fire 2A for $28 plus shipping, the Fire 3, $35. I would be honestly more tempted to try to buy this than that $20, $23, $24 Orange Pi, just because of the Samsung processor. I'm not a fan of Samsung as a company. I will say I appreciate their processors.
Yeah, they do make some pretty good chips, like you said. Does this come with that heat sink as well?
I think it matters where you buy it at. Because I tried to look at the same thing. Let me see. If I go to Friendly Arm, it usually has included in box. What's in the box? Yeah, it does have the heat sink in the box. You get the, well, at least with the Fire 3, you get the heat sink and the quick start guide in the box. It's at the bottom of the link for it. And let's take a look at the 2A. It also says it comes with the heat sink. So that's good because, let me tell you something, Samsung phones blow up, Samsung processors get hot. Very cool. And one thing I'll say at least about this versus a lot of other processors, this at least gives me the impression this runs normal Debian because it says it, this doesn't say it supports Ubuntu and supports Debian. This literally says it supports Linux kernel 4.4. That tells me that there's very little, if any, secret sauce going in to the distribution for this. So you literally might be able to take this stock ARM Debian download from Debian.org and install this on the device and actually have it work for at least booting up. You will probably need specific drivers for either the NIC or the video or other things, but just for a straight boot, it might work. I wish it had USB 3, I'm not going to lie.
Yep.
But, you know, you can't have everything, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you guys have any other links or topics you wanted to talk about?
Well, just one little modification here. In the Hughes Compound Southern Command, my office is a partner desk, which is the, unfortunately, I use about half of it. So, because I'm on one side and I've got the monitor surrounding me. So the other side is like, maybe I'll do project stuff. And beyond that is the data center in a drawer. And if I'm doing something, that's where my network connectivity is. That's where, so I usually plug all the new Pi devices in there. And then I got to run around to my desk and on the keyboard. I finally ran a wire, a Cat5 wire. I got a gig switch next to me here. And so now I have a dev/Pi prototyping area so I can power them up, you know, swap out the micro SD cards, plug them into something new, whatever it may be. So I'm embarrassed it's taken me so long to do this, but it's a big freaking help.
Now, do you have a station for soldering and so forth too as well?
Yeah, you know, I broke out the soldering iron a couple of days ago, and no joke, crap I've soldered's in orbit. Might even be in orbit right now. But I don't have the good tools. And unfortunately, on a Pi Zero, I tried to solder the 40-pin header in, and I don't know if I cooked the land or didn't get a good solder joint. I tried to, because I wanted to take the stuff, the Home Assistant from, originally it was running on the Pi Zero, and I pulled the micro SD through it on the Pi 3, so I could do the 433 megahertz stuff. I'm like, all right, well, once I'm done with that, I'll solder the header in, and I'll just plug it back in. But unfortunately, it's not working. So I'm a little bummed. I don't know if I cooked the land or just something didn't do it right. But yeah, I don't have a soldering station hooked up here. I don't solder that much, so it's kind of a more rare event.
Now, there's ways of getting around soldering. It's not a necessity, but sometimes it is.
Yeah, with a Pi Zero, you know, you're going to solder.
Yes, that is true, especially when it comes to power.
And I probably should be doing, you know, liquid flux and, you know, a different solder. I'm probably doing absolutely everything wrong for the that 40-pin header.
Gotcha. Did you have anything you wanted to bring up, Ryan?
I ended up taking one of my old Raspberry Pis, and I think I brought this up on the show before with reference to UniFi. So UniFi is a company that offers security and wireless networking as well as surveillance as well too for enterprise and home use as well. And so I've taken some of their enterprise APs and got a couple for Christmas. And like I said, taking it a Raspberry Pi 3 and using that as a UniFi controller for my APs and it's worked out pretty good. I'm pretty thrilled about it. I'm thinking about getting firewall. Couldn't think of the name of it. The UFI firewall, the USG, to do deep packet inspection, and that just allows me to drill down deeper into the packets, to the actual payload, and see what's actually being delivered to the host and to the destination. So I can actually block by IP packets, basically, by the services that's in the data. And I think that's pretty cool. So I just found another use for my Pi. The setup was very easy, and I love it. I think it's pretty cool.
Was there any special software that went into that Raspberry Pi to control those devices, or are you just using it as like a gateway?
No, not a gateway, just a controller. So I just I went to raspberrypi.org, downloaded Raspbian, and went to the UniFi website and downloaded the stable version of UniFi and made some configuration changes, and that was it. I logged in on another machine. So it's a headless unit. So I just tucked it away right on my rack in my data corner that I have. Went to my PC, logged into it via the IP address, and configured it for my PC. Well, once I did that, it gave me the option of having an online portal as well too. So I can actually log into my controller from outside my house. So I can actually make some configuration changes to my APs and so forth using two-factor authentication.
This is pretty cool.
But it's pretty cool. So let's say if one of my APs dies or whatever, and I just replace it with another AP, I just simply have to connect it to my network, and it pushes the configuration.
Love that. AP.
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah, I don't have to go in and set anything up. I do have to adopt it into the network, but once I adopt it, it pushes the configuration.
Right, so this is even the kind of thing where, hypothetically, a friend can come over. You technically don't even have to have a password on your access point, but when they go to connect, they're put in like a standby bin. This, to me, is like the enterprise-type stuff, and then you can, in your interface, say, I grant this person access to this network.
Yeah, so these APs are really cool. I can set up hotspots. So, and I can, set up guest networks, and if someone says, hey, can I use your network, I have the ability to set up a captive portal, so they can, I could give them access for X amount of hours while they're here, and as soon as they leave the house, that time frame that they logged in for just,
expires.
It expires. Yeah, so I don't have to worry about leaving that guest network open and running all the time.
Okay, really quick, a rough estimation of hardware cost.
So there's different models of these APs. The first one that I got way back when was like $80, and that gave you a whole host of features, like the one that I was just explaining about having a captive portal and guest accounts. And I'm trying to figure out how many. It's definitely, you get a 5 gigahertz bandwidth as well as 2 gig.
That's fine.
2 gig bandwidth.
80 is fair.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I got the Pro model, which gives you a little bit more range and a lot more antennas too as well. So you get a little bit more speed, but it's definitely, like I said, that was $120, I believe.
Still fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a self-respectable router in your house, if you spend less than 80, you're probably going to be disappointed.
Right. Yeah, these are access points. I have my routing. I have Cisco routers that do the routing for me in the back end. But you can definitely connect them to an off-the-shelf router. It doesn't necessarily have to be, the UniFi USG or any of their hardware. You can get a Linksys router or, like I said, a Cisco router. But you do have benefits of using the UniFi platform. They are pretty much configured primarily the same way, using that controller, the UniFi controller.
Gotcha. Well, really quick for the listener, when we say UniFi, it's UNIFI.
Correct.
Okay, now it's just a real estimation. Time to set all this up, 3 to 5 hours more?
It took me, I would say maybe 2.5 hours to set up the Pi and the VAPs.
That's fine.
And yeah, and that was the first time I've actually set up the Pi before. I've configured the APs before, but yeah, using the Raspberry Pi as the controller, it was like 2.5 hours. It was 2.5 hours of, hey honey, can you do this, and walking away and then coming back again. So it wasn't that grueling at all.
That's a very, very cool project, and I like the fact that you don't have to use that access point technically, but it's the kind of thing I would want to use the appropriate device just for. My logic is stability, and I know it's going to work exactly how it's supposed to work.
Right.
Very cool.
Two questions.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Dor, one question for you. How is your migration from OwnCloud to NextCloud
running
going?
Great. Perfectly on schedule.
You're smirking. Okay. So I know
what
that means.
I didn't set a date yet.
And so the next question is for Brian, and I'm kind of curious about this because I have some, if you guys remember back when all IBM ThinkPads were made in China by Lenovo. And so now, you know, that line is manufactured by Lenovo, and I don't know if it was a year or two ago, it came with, I don't know if it was a virus or an ad redirector.
99% of the bad Lenovo news you heard had nothing to do with ThinkPads. They were the Idea Pads and the Flex Pads and every other kind of pad, but not the ThinkPad.
Okay, so now I'm getting these, and we talked about the LED controller for $8. Should I have a VLAN with my home automation stuff on it?
I wanted to ask you earlier if you Wiresharked your network. Because I thought I heard
not.
Like your home assistant master password going over your network in the clear, maybe?
What?
That's what it sounded like you said. The key word I would say is intrusion detection.
Yep.
I could see running, I don't want to say like a honeypot because that's actually the inverse, running a aggressive sniffer on your network for a length of time and then just review the logs on it. I understand why people say separate VLAN for this kind of stuff, but the bottom line is it's almost impossible because the things you want to use to control it are on your other LAN.
Yeah.
So you would literally have to have dedicated devices, like an old phone sitting on your countertop, that's the phone you use when you want to control this part of the home network. Otherwise, I don't think there's a really straight good answer, except for you either trust it or you don't. I think.
Well, you can, like Rich was saying, you can have the VLANs and you can set up, it depends on what routing gear you have, you can set up the routes to say, okay, this is the only place you can go is through the internet and you can't talk to this network. Or you can't talk to that network, and you can just make it explicitly clear. Or you can just keep it isolated and say, just talk to the internet alone. And the only thing is, if you wanted to control that device via your phone, you would have to make your access control list very specific to do that. Or don't have an access control list at all and just log onto that wireless network to make it to change something, and then when you're done, you know, log off and log on to something else. But you can lock it down via MAC address, so you're the only Mac that actually can log on to it. You know, there's different ways of doing it. But like Dora is saying, do you trust it or do you don't trust it? Either way, you're not 100%. You know.
Well, and it's the kind of thing. Enough Benjamin Franklins, enough $100 bills, and you have no issues because in every room you would have a panel on the wall, like, I don't know, Star Trek, where you have a dedicated, you know, 8.5 by 11 panel on the wall where that's your control center for your other network. And then you have the family network with, you know, the computers that possibly do taxes, possibly do banking, possibly. Well, see, personally, me, I would also put Facebook on that other network, but that's just me. In reality, if I was truly paranoid, I would probably have 4 different networks in my environment.
Yeah.
I would literally just have a banking network. That network only handles banking transactions or credit card type transactions on it and nothing else. I would have my media network. That's where everything gets streamed to or streamed from. nothing else. It also has a high QoS, so, you know, has good packet transfers. I would then have the personal communication network. This is where I communicate with friends, family. I don't communicate with family. Friends, colleagues, stuff like that. And then I would have the untrusted hardware communicating with hardware network. But then it would be an utter tumor to do anything. Oh, which network am I on? Or I'd literally have to have a massive laptop with 32 gigs of RAM running. I can't remember the name of the OS.
PFSense?
No. Running, it was like a Jails type OS where each application would have its own colored border, and each colored border I could say, okay, now when you run, you use this network port. When you run, you use this network. And literally have four network ports hanging off my device at all times. But that's not, you know, convenient. And convenience trumps everything in America in 2018. Welcome to 2018. Convenience trumps everything. That's my slogan for 2018.
The problem is having all those four networks, you still have one internet connection.
Well, then, like I said, Franklin Fixes will fix everything for internet connections. Of course, with one company, because that's the way America is. There is no right answer. That's the problem, Rich. This is like saying, asking me how to swing a baseball bat. Whatever feels natural to you and whatever gets you results. Man, that was almost like Dr. Ruth advice.
If he's asking the question, should he do a VLAN or should he not do a VLAN, I would always say yes, do a VLAN if you can. And if you can't, you can always daisy chain over the shelf routers too as well.
Right.
I did that for years. Yep. I had the 3 router setup with the one connected to the modem, 2 routers connected off that to have separate networks when I was doing computer repair. So the infected Windows computers I brought in would be on that network and everything else would be on the other network.
Smart.
Well, I know, but I didn't, I don't want to ever fix another Windows computer. So I'm out of that. Okay. If you guys would like to contact us, all you got to do is either shoot us an email at minipcshow@podnuts.com. You can shoot us a voicemail at 7076podnut, or you can send us in a audio file via email. You can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/minipcshow. You can go directly to podnuts.com, click on support to find alternate means of support. If you would like to contact me directly instead of the show, it's doordoorgeek@gmail.com or mail at podnuts.com. Rich, Brian, I want to thank you guys for everything. Thank you guys for another successful year of podcasting. Thank you for ensuring that shows get published. Thank you for also encouraging me to do shows even if it's not the most convenient time. With that, we will talk to everyone again in about a week.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network, and we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.